Hey everyone, welcome to Danny's Diary, a podcast powered by Singing News Magazine. I'm your host, Danny Jones. My guest today is Becky Isaacs Bowman. Now, that sounds like a mouthful right there, but as she just informed me and our engineer, Troy Peach, that's really not her name. Go ahead, tell us your name.
Well, I was born with the name of Rebecca Marcel Isaacs, and then I got married and added Bowman, but no one feels compelled to call me any of my real names, so they just go with Becky.
Okay,
so,
well,
yeah, there you go.
Which name do you want us to call you today?
Any. Okay. I'm comfortable with them all. Just don't call me Sonia or Ben.
Okay. All right. Well, I have known Becky for a long time. We literally grew up in this industry together way back when the Isaacs were first getting started. And now it just seems like everywhere you turn around and many different genres of or many different divisions of Christian music, you're seeing the name Isaacs. It's bluegrass. You see it in Southern. You see it in acoustic. You see it in a little bit of everything. The Isaacs have so much going on right now. How do you manage it all?
It can be a little overwhelming and stressful. But, you know, it's been interesting because, you know, I've always felt like the Isaacs have been seed sowers. God has allowed us to go into so many unique genres of music and plant seeds. And really interesting to watch people who have never heard the gospel for the first time, and it's a unique place to be. So it's a lot to manage, but you know, you just have to be true to yourself, keep your prayer life going, and go to church, stay grounded, stay around grounded people, and you know, the Bible says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. And so we the Isaacs seek God, and it's important for everybody to do that, but that's the only way we keep our minds because it's, but you know what? Everybody's busy these days. I've had that conversation with so many people. Husbands and wives are having to work now in the home to financially make it. And it's not like it was in the 60s where one income sustained a family. And so everybody's having to find where that peace comes from and that grounded. And I'm just confident that when God is the center of your marriage, God is the center of your ministry, God's the center of your job, then things will work the way they're supposed to. And somehow, although it's chaotic, there's peace.
Well, you know, the Isaacs are known for being leaders in trying things outside of the box. And you've been able to take your style of gospel music into so many different areas that you're able to pull from a support base that's very wide, very deep. And even that sometimes seems like, oh, we've got to do one more thing just to keep everything going. And I'm not saying it's a desperate situation because it's not, but I'm just saying the market changes so frequently, so rapidly, you have to be on your best game every day. And as a result, family time and work time, you find out it's difficult to juggle. And lo and behold, somewhere along the way, your son, your daughter grew up on us. And you, your son Levi is how old now?
23.
And your daughter?
19.
Oh, wow. Thanks, Becky. You're making me feel old. In fact, you and I were those ages, I think, or somewhere when we first met. And
that's
so,
right.
So big, exciting chapter going on in your world right now. You are working on the first ever solo recording for yourself.
I am, you know, in my 40s and 44, you know, and I've spent my life and my career on the Isaacs and helping other people, doing a lot of background vocals. And I was in the studio last year doing vocals on Jimmy Fortune's record, and Kelly Back was in the studio, and he'll forever be part of my story now. But he was in the studio, and there was a song sitting on the table, and I just said, I have always wanted to cut that song. And he said, oh, you should. I said, well, maybe someday. He said, well, you should cut it on like a solo record. And I said, you know, I do that nervous giggle that I do. And I said, you know, I would love to do a solo record, but I've even had it titled for 10 years, and it's going to songs that pulled me through the tough times. Mm-hmm. But I always wanted to do them with Guitar Heroes since I'm a guitar player. And so he heard me loud and clear because we all went to dinner that night. And before I left the dinner table, he had already called the studio and held a date. And he sent me a text and he said, be there April 12th. Don't stand me up. Mm. And he forced me to put feet to my dream. And so we started with the first song. And since then, over the past year, I've just, you know, I'm at the mercy of other touring artists. And so far, I've had Ron Block come in, Jimmy Capps come in, Kelly Back. I have two or three in the making waiting to come in, Mike Riddle. And people that have just influenced my life. And I think the song selection may be the thing that people are going to be caught off guard by. I've had most songwriters say to me, did you write all these songs? And when I said I didn't write any of them, they're like, what? And I said, well, for 44 years, they've had Stand Still and Waiting in the Water and My Heart. If I've had a bad day and I wrote it in a song, they knew exactly what I was going through. The Isaacs are very transparent. Mm-hmm. And so I said, but what the side of me they don't know of me is songs that pull me through tough times when I'm down. Songs I didn't write. Where do I go when I need encouraging? So the majority of these songs are songs from the 30s, from the Great Depression. You know, you got to laugh a little, cry a little, you know, just songs that just speak joy. And so it's in the making. I don't know when the timeline will be. I so far we have 8 done. So we're off to a good start, but
well, sometimes good things take a little extra time. And, you know, since word has began to filter out that this is in the works, there have been a lot of people just say, you know what, this is long overdue. This is something worth waiting for. We're glad you're doing it. You've met with some pretty good response already. And, you know, we're all looking for great things from this album. No pressure. None whatsoever. Let's talk about your husband, John. Now, you told me several years ago a great story about how you two met. And, of course, John traveled with the Isaacs for a while. He has a very great background in music as well. But he stole your heart at a little place in North Carolina, did he not?
He sure did. So we were playing a show together with Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver, and he had just come on board with Doyle. He had come from more of a local type band and had landed his first professional job after Russell Moore left. And we were playing together, and us and the Primitives and Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver. And we always, back in those days, met early at this one venue and played. We had a tournament of softball. And so who would win every year? What group? It was so fun. Well, that year, Doyle Lawson and Quicksilver was late. So the Isaacs and the Primitive had our little competition, and I can't remember who won. And we were at this place where you could shower and then go to the buses and get ready. And I'd walked out of the shower, you know, dressed, but a towel on my head because I didn't have time to fix my hair. And in the meanwhile, while me and Sonia and Mom were in the locker room, Doyle Lawson's bus had pulled up, and John and Doyle weren't going to miss playing softball. So they were outside throwing the ball. And I walked out with this big old towel on my head, no makeup on, and walking to our bus. And apparently John noticed me from the corner of his eye. And when Doyle threw the baseball, it hit him right in the face, knocked his teeth out.
Yeah, got it.
And so
getting your attention.
That's right. So I think Doyle knocked some sense into him. And that was the beginning. I was 15. And we talked for three years, and then right before I turned 19, we got married. And so we're going on 26 years of marriage this year, and John's had an amazing career. He, after he left Doyle, during our engagement phase, he's with Allison Krauss and Union Station. He had taken Dan Tominski's place. And then since then, he left when we got married, joined the Isaacs for 13 years. While our children were young, he didn't want to miss that part. And then he came off the road to be a preacher. And to evangelize, and in the meanwhile, he started a band to where he could work it around his preaching schedule called the Boxcars, and you know, he's had an amazing career of his own, but his first love is to preach the gospel, and so he's kind of went solo with that and stays busy evangelizing, and we meet in the middle on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday and make it work.
He's certainly one of the most solid and consistent individuals I've ever met, just a great guy. What's going on in your songwriting corner now?
Well, we just, Sonia and I write a lot. Sonia, now that she has 3 children, is in the same place I've been all these years, where before she had kids, she wrote through the week for different publishing companies. But we have gotten in this little pattern of Sonia and I really, really focus on an Isaac's record, and we'll write about 20 songs. We'll pick from those and then pitch the other ones that didn't fit the theme of our record. So that's kind of how our music is getting out there. So we just got off of last year writing for a new record, and it's a very Americana-style record. It's kind of like that where I had started off, where God's putting us in places to plant seeds. We've been privileged to go into a lot of these performing arts centers where 70% of the ticket is already purchased by season holders. Mm-hmm. Doesn't necessarily mean they're Christians, but it means that they've got a ticket. And then the other 30% are open to your fan base. So God has just allowed us to present the gospel in to people that may have never been to church before. And right. We don't change what we do. However, it's new for them. And so we wanted a record of songs that they would be familiar with. So in between all Isaac songs, like If That Isn't Love and Waiting in the Water and Stand Still and He Understands My Tears, that we could throw in some that they would be familiar with so they would feel a connection. So we just made a record, and we don't know exactly the release date of that as well, but it's got songs like Forever and For Always and You're the Inspiration. And we did The Birds' Turn, 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 taken from Ecclesiastes. And We Can Work It Out by The Beatles. Just great faith or great fun songs that are family. Mm-hmm. I think in a time that we're living in right now, the message of We Can Work It Out is, a political year, and there's nothing that we can't work out if we just try.
And there's nothing wrong with clean, good family entertainment.
That's right.
We need it.
That's right. But there's so many places that people want to take their family, and there's got to be those options where you can buy a ticket for a very clean place to take your 10-year-old. And we want to present that as well. And so the half of that record are those kind of songs you're just going to be familiar with. And then the other half are songs that Sonia and I, along with others, wrote. We've got one on there that she co-wrote with someone else called American Face. And it's all about the face of America. It looks different. It may be this, it may be that. But at the end of the day, it's what America looks like. We wrote one song called It's Never Too Late for Love, to speak to people who have just waited a long time to find the right person, but don't give up. They're out there. And so we spent all that time writing, and now we've got several songs that we hope that are going to be pitched out, and hopefully other artists will pick them up too.
You mentioned a little while ago, when it's time to do an Isaac's album, you and your sister and all the other writers will get together, write these songs, ultimately pick the 10 or 15 or whatever makes the album, and then the rest are a pitch to other artists. Has there ever been a song that you wish, I really wish we would have held on to that one? Has there been one like that?
I really do. We really do have one. As a matter of fact, we wrote The Storm with Joseph Havidank, and that's a song that I wanted to write for so long. And the Booth Brothers ended up recording it, and they did an amazing job on it. But we wrote the song, and we weren't sure that it would fit the record that we were doing at that time. And Joseph told us he was going to record it, and he held it for a couple years. Joseph might get mad at me. I love you, Joseph. Held it for a couple years. And then by the time our record, we didn't record it because Joseph was going to. We co-wrote it with him. And by the time Joseph's record came out and ours came out, it ended up getting pitched to the Booths, and they did great. But it doesn't mean we won't go back and re-record it. Mm-hmm. But, there are some that you just say, I know that we're supposed to do this. It just may not fit the theme of this record, and you hold on to it. But, God has been so good about giving us songs that, like, for example, The Master. We wrote that, and the Isaacs would have recorded it had we had done it in that 18-month period that we turn around a record. But in the meanwhile, the Bolings reach out, and they need a song, and it becomes a theme song for them. And, A Miracle Today was a song that was very personal to me. It was part of my healing song, but it ended up being something they needed after their bus wreck. And, the Bolings just now got a song called, and it's ironic that the Bolings have recorded a lot, but they do ask a lot for our songs. And one right now that's coming out called Behold the Lamb. Karen's new single, which is The God That I Serve, we wrote with her. And I think it's just as rewarding to see other artists come out and cut your songs and sing them. But there are some of them that, come from a deep place that you want to sing yourself to.
You mentioned healing a few moments ago. A lot of people don't realize that there was a stretch in your life that it took a lot of effort for you to get on a platform and do what you do.
Yes. On February 22nd of 2011, That was the day that changed my life forever, because I'd walked into a holistic clinic called Internal Balance. And it changed my life because for 12 years prior, I had suffered from Crohn's disease, which was not your normal Crohn's disease that people deal with, where you're constantly just the stomach issue. But my it started out with my eyes, and I had a severe inflammation in the eyes, the retina, the uvea, the iris, every part of my eye, if it could be inflamed, was inflamed. And I wound up at Mayo Clinic, and they told me that I probably would lose my sight in both of my eyes. And then next thing you know, the inflammation has spread to my skin, and I got to where water couldn't touch my skin without it causing my skin to just burn so badly. And so I went through periods of time like that before the inflammation started attacking the small bowel, then eventually the large bowel, and then ulcers in the colon. And so by the time 10 years into this disease, I was being treated for every symptom. I was on 20 different medications. I was on a chemo injection every week. Every other week, I was on a Humira injection. And I was just spiraling downward. I didn't think I would live to see 40 at that time. And that's where songs like Waiting in the Water came from. But on February 22nd of 2011, after trying, honestly, I can say I tried everything on the market to get better. And I walked into this holistic clinic, and it was just a life-changing day for me. And I began that journey of faith of healing. It wasn't overnight. It wasn't an instant healing. And had you told me 10 years prior that someone could lay hands on you and you receive an instant healing, which I believe, you know, I'm Pentecostal enough to believe that healing still takes place, you know. But I would have never dreamed that I'd be in a place where I'd say that there's no way I would trade the journey for the instant healing. And I'm there now. The journey has just been amazing. My faith, you know, the finances of my treatments, you know, I'd go to the mailbox and it'd be $500 in the mailbox. I'd go to my guitar case and $100 just sitting under my pillow money. No one knew where it came from. People would just come up at the concerts and slip $500 from one treatment to the next. Every treatment was covered except for the amount of money I was used to doing out of pocket. It wasn't abnormal for me to spend $12,000 a year on just my shots. And as God just began to build my faith, and John 9 came into play, because the third week I was in the treatment, I'm scared to death, you know, $1,200 this day, $500 this day, and not knowing if it was going to work. You know, there was no guarantee that after all the time and money I'd spend that my body would respond. I was already taking everything they had to offer on the market. And by the time I found this clinic, I was on the very last drug Mayo Clinic could offer. And so I knew I was in desperation. And so, you know, I began to do this. And 3 weeks in, I got a phone call from my friend, and she said, "Becky, you need to read John 9. And I began to read it, and we were talking, and, you know, this blind man, he receives his sight, but it wasn't instant. He had to walk by faith and not by sight. And as I began to study the commentaries, you know, from the temple gate where Jesus stood at that time to minister, through the city of David to the pool where he dipped himself, was a half of a mile, and it was all downhill, and it was, I've walked it. And I can't believe a blind man did it. And he dips himself and receives that healing, but it wasn't instant for him. He had to walk by faith and not by sight. And I'm convinced, had he not done the full thing where he dipped himself in that water, took that walk of faith, that he would have died a blind man. And so God was just saying to me, wake up every day, put one foot in front of the other, and trust me. Put action to your faith. Walk this out. And it worked for me. And 9 years later, I am no longer have issues with my eyes or my colon or my skin. You know, I'm getting older, and I'm fighting needing to wear a pair of reading glasses. But as of right now, I'm the last Isaacs in reading glasses, including my family. So I'm like, okay, God,
that might be a little bit of
pride. But God's been so faithful, and it has become a testimony. I had a gentleman come to me in 2003. I woke up sick in 2000. This is how long it's been. And in 2003, I was in the middle of singing the song Stand Still, and just out of nowhere, this 90-year-old man just stopped the service. And he said, "Becky," he said, "the Lord wants you to know that you're going to have a living testimony, and it's going to go around the world, and it will be like scales that fall from your eyes. Wait and see." And a month later, we're singing at a church in Florida, and I was putting my guitar up, and I was very, very sick that day. And a woman come up to me and just put her hand on my hand, and she said, word for word, the same man this man says in Ohio, not knowing me from Adam. And all these years later, God has given me a testimony that's went around the world, and it has been like scales that have come off of my eyes, because, you know, the scales that come off of Paul's eyes when he saw DePaul, and it was that he began to walk in his calling. And without going into too much, but my anxiety and my fear of playing music, stage fright, panic attacks on stage, the medicine made me want to quit. But it wasn't until God gave me that purpose that I didn't resent my calling, and I began, like Paul, to walk in my calling and not resent my calling. Mm-hmm. And so the scales did fall from my eyes, and there's people from all around the world now that come to this clinic for treatments. I've met families from Ireland, from Poland, from, and God's true to his word. He's true to his word. And, you know, it's the journey. It really is what you learn on the journey.
And you made a reference to how being on this side of the journey now has changed what you do on stage too. I remember a time when Becky would not utter a word other than what's in the song on stage. She was the quiet, reserved one, way almost had to drag her to the front line just a little bit. And now all of a sudden, you know, your witness is bold. You're not only from a spiritual standpoint, but you're also just enjoying being up there more, because, as you said, you know, the pressure's off now. You're on this side of the journey, and it's so much better now, and you're able to enjoy it. And that's it's almost like a starting fresh.
Yeah.
And so as you've completed this and you're seeing your testimony affect other people, what do you think will be the next step in your career? Now, that's a very loaded question, but the songwriting has done so well. The Isaacs are in demand. You know, the bookings opportunities are incredible. It just seems like every time you turn around, there's a new door opening. Where do you honestly see yourself in the next few years? If you had to peg, I want to be doing this in 5 years or whatever, what would you say? What do you envision?
Well, I think that the things that you are most afraid of tend to be the ones that you should embrace, because that's the one I feel like the enemy's trying to keep you from. I had this conversation yesterday with a friend of mine, with a child I was seeing grow up. And what is it that causes you to have a backbone? What hardship in your life grew that backbone a little stronger? I don't know if I'm going to articulate this the way I feel it and see it, but one day this hardship, whatever this might be, caused me to have a backbone, a stronger one. Mm-hmm. And then a few years later, this hardship grew my backbone. And then about 10 years ago, the sickness, it grew my backbone. And next thing you know, you find yourself with a backbone you never dreamed you would have. And as a parent, you look at your kid and you think, what hardship is going to cause Levi and Jacoby to become the man or the woman they're supposed to be with integrity and character? And as a parent, you pray really hard that they grow the backbone the way they're supposed to with little damage. Am I making any sense to you?
Yes, you are.
Okay. I think that when I first started, we were talking about, you know, seek ye first the kingdom, God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you. Probably the most rewarding thing that the Isaacs or I personally have ever done is a prayer service that we started. And it's 3 years strong, but it's in the secrets. It'll never be press. It'll never be the things that will get you a trophy. People will never see it, but God sees it. Mm-hmm. And our nonprofit work in Israel, where we raise money and we kill ourselves all year round to take money to Holocaust survivors who have nothing. They're dying in poverty. They've already lost everything once. They're dying in poverty. Lone soldiers who aren't functioning. Orphans who have been orphaned for whatever reason that started by Holocaust survivors who had no place to go. Obviously, that's our heritage. But I've been looking at what God has done, and I truly think the world may see music, but the most rewarding thing that I see us doing is more philanthropy work or things in the secret that maybe I shouldn't talk about. But I think my greatest gift is to encourage and to pray for people.
Very well stated. And, you know, as you mentioned, the world may see the music. Well, what you have to understand is that the music is the tool to open the door. Then the real work starts.
That's
how a lot of people will look at it. You're listening to Danny's Diary, the podcast powered by Singing News Magazine. And if you want to keep up with everything that's going on in the world of Southern gospel music, you need Singing News Magazine coming to your mailbox every month. You can do that by calling 800-527-5226 or visiting singingnews.com. Click on the subscribe tab and all of your information that you need to know will soon be on the way. Our guest today, Becky Isaacs Bowman of the Isaacs. Becky, we're going to change things up just a little bit today. I want to ask you a few generic questions that you have probably been asked a million times. So you should be able to give me the answer very quickly. Your favorite guitar?
My 1939 D28. I'm saying it so fast. Okay.
All right, let's try that again. Becky, your favorite guitar?
A 1939 D18.
Okay. The song that you wish you had written?
Oh. How long do I have?
Oh, take all the time you want.
Song I wish I had written. It Is Well With My Soul.
Good song.
My favorite.
Your favorite story about your brother that you really shouldn't tell, but you love to tell?
Oh, gosh. Every photo shoot that we do, you can guarantee Ben is pinching us somewhere he shouldn't be pinching us. Can I say that?
Well, you just did. We'll keep it. Troy Peach, our engineer, is absolutely loving this over here because he knows Ben well. And yeah, that sounds like Ben. It really does. And of course, now that leads into this right here. There are a lot of people on the Isaacs bus. There's a lot of family on the Isaacs bus. What's it like traveling with that many people? I mean, I know that's a question that you're asked a lot, but you know what? 45 feet, no matter how hard you try, is only 45 feet. Give us a typical day on the
goodness.
Bus in the Isaacs.
So you wake up to three children that are hungry and want breakfast and want to play in a space of maybe 10 feet. And you've got noisemakers all over. Like, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about. Like, they sound like crickets or they sound like whoosh. And every bunk has their own noisemaker so they can block out the noise of the kids and all that. So as you walk through our bus, it sounds like a daycare, then a safari. And then in the back, it's piled up like a junkyard because we've had nowhere else to put our stuff. And so, but it works. We've all learned what buttons not to push, and we know what buttons to push if we want to go there. But, you know, your little bunk becomes your safety haven. And you know, when you're family, we fight hard. I think that's the most unique, but we love bigger. We might fight hard, but we love bigger. And we pray together. And I'm a firm believer that people that pray together stay together. And, you know, we kind of made that pact a long time ago. We'd rather be a family than a singing show. And so the day that we can't get along is the day that the Isaacs won't do this because it's more important to remain a family.
And how long have the Isaacs been singing?
I'm 44, and as of this year, it'll be 50 years for my parents from the beginning.
I think you're going to make it. I think they're going to be around a while. At this point, yeah, we might as well keep going. You know, we work a lot of concerts together at different events, and you and I have laughed about this. You can always count on a certain order of the members of the Isaacs to walk into the building. Lily's first.
Always.
She's always in first. Then comes the variable. It might be Ben, or it might be you. It just kind of depends on external factors going on. However, the other thing that you can always count on is one person always bringing up the end. And, of course, that's your sister, Sonia.
Always.
That has got to have led to many interesting discussions. I mean, let's be honest about it. We're not throwing anybody under the bus. We're merely talking about what we've experienced. Y'all started a few programs without her before, haven't you?
Oh, we have. What's interesting is I traveled for 12 years with a very, very severe case of Crohn's disease. And I would like run to the bathroom and I could be on stage in 30 seconds before they'd say, "Make welcome the Isaacs." And we're still stressed out about my sister, not me, the one sick. But it's an interesting dynamic because Sonia kind of has taken on the role of writing out the set list. And so my mom is in the back room getting ready. "Sonia, we need the set list. Sonia, we need the set list. Set list." And you'll go into her little drawer that you pull out, that like where her little vanity area where she's getting it. And there are 100, what do you call those, postcards?
Sticky notes.
Yeah, or old school postcards. Is that what you call them? No.
No cards.
That's it. Thank you.
With our set list. And they haven't changed, but she still has to write it out. And mom still has to ask for a set list. And then mom's inside because she goes in first. She just feels like she has to be in there. And then she's texting us while we're trying to get ready. And then she still feels compelled to ask me, "Is Sonia almost ready?" every night. And so it's interesting. And then Sonia, she comes flying in, and we've had to start a few times without her. But most of the time, she is there when they say, "Make welcome the Isaacs," but we are sweating under our lip about it, you know, like lip sweat.
So one thing that you'll never see on the set list is probably the first song featuring Sonia, just in case, just in case. All right, we'll leave her alone for now. I know you're very justifiably proud of your kids, Ben and Jacoby. They've got a lot. Not Ben. I'm sorry. Ben.
He is a Ben, kid. He's like everybody's fourth kid.
Levi and Jacoby. And what's going on in their worlds right now?
So Levi, he graduated with a four-year degree, a business degree, and in the meanwhile worked for the Isaacs. But he's also in the process of recording his second solo record. And, you know, I know that the Isaacs have been able to just give him a learning curve, a little stepping, you know, stone to move to another level for him to learn and experience and work ethics. But eventually, Levi was called to preach. And he loves the Lord. I've not seen a kid like him who just soaks up the Holy Spirit like he does. And he loves to be in the presence of the Lord. So I know that he's going to have a future in preaching and his own solo ministry. And but it's in God's time. And so he's working on that second solo record right now and you know, waiting on his soulmate to come in to his life. And Jacoby, she is a freshman in college. She's going to Ball State. And she also works for our initiative. So Jacoby's a little, you know, Levi knew what he wanted to do from the day he was born. Jacoby, she's just my child that is like, "Oh, I'll figure it out as we go," and a little bit looser about it. So I don't know what she's going to end up doing, but she sings beautifully and plays. She can play. And, you know, I didn't even know either of them could sing until one day they needed to sing and Jacoby stepped up and filled in for Sonia. And I was like, "What has just happened?" So I don't know. I really encourage them to be who they are. I think that as a parent, I say to them all the time, "I don't want you to feel pressure to do this because you've seen how hard your dad and I have worked. I want you to feel free." And I have encouraged them both. John and I have both encouraged them to get solid education so they're not trapped in music. But we'll see. I don't know. Levi, I kind of can tell you, but Jacoby, we're just going to have to.
It always helps to have a little wild card out there, just a little bit, keep things interesting.
Yep.
You've, throughout your career and your personal life, you've been exposed to so many other performers of music of all styles. Do you have anyone from the music world that you would genuinely classify as your hero?
Definitely Dolly Parton. Definitely. I grew up, you know, my dad was in the bluegrass world with Ross Stanley, Keith Whitley, Ricky Skaggs, you know, those kind of people. That how he started his career. And my mom was on the folk side, the Peter, Paul, and Mary before they got saved. And excuse me. But in the home, we listened to a lot of that bluegrassy style music and folk music. But when mom and dad got saved, they were very strict about what we were allowed to listen to. We were allowed to listen to Ricky Skaggs and Dolly Parton and the Goodmans and the Rambos, but it was a select few, the Marshall family. The Marshall family probably was the most influential family on our, when it comes to the style of music we love to sing. And they disbanded probably in the 80s, so there's not a whole lot out on them for people to listen to. But Dolly Parton was just that person that she just represented our style of music with class and soul, and she was just everything to me. And so I remember praying as a child for two or three things to come to pass in my life. And one of them was, you're not going to believe this, but I have no reason to lie about it. There were three things I prayed about. I asked God for an old guitar, which I couldn't afford. I've always wanted a Corvette because when you're a kid, you dream. Mm-hmm. You have dreams, but
sure.
All of a sudden you get married and your finances don't find you being able to do those things. And the third one was to sing on Dolly Parton's record. And so when I was 5 years ago, a gentleman gifted me the very guitar I dreamed of, which was a pre-war Martin. Cried my eyes out for months. He's become like a father to me now. My dearest friend passed away and he willed me his Corvette. Mm. And I drive that car and think of him every day. I would trade the car in 100 times over just to have him, but he left me something that he knew that was important to me, that I could feel his presence. And then the third one was Dolly Parton. We've had the privilege to sing on four of her records. And I never dreamed of just singing on her records. My dream was, I want to sit down and have coffee with Dolly. I want to know her different than the world knows her or than most people. I was pregnant with Jacoby. This was 19 years ago. And the phone call came in. Dolly wants, I'd had the opportunity to sing a solo on Brian Sutton's record 20-something years ago, and she had heard that. And this is how she said it. I want them girls that sang on that record to come sing on mine. And it became a full circle moment, and we showed up in the studio that day. She spent 8 hours. We sang on two of the songs that day. She went to Subway. She served us. We had coffee. We talked about the Lord. And that was the first time we met, and the sweetest letter come in the mail. And then the second time, the third time, over the course of these 19 years, about every 4 or 5 years, we've been blessed to do something with her. And it comes with the sweetest typed out letter with the most amazing love. And she is who people think she is. And it's been a dream. It's been a dream. I mean, there's been a lot of other opportunities that have come, but I'd have to put that at the top.
Well, nothing wrong with dreams and nothing more satisfying than watching those dreams come to pass. And that's certainly the story of Becky Isaacs Bowman and all the other names that you have. So anyway, our guest today has been Becky Isaacs Bowman, and glad you stopped by. It's been great to be here with you, and come back anytime. You've been listening to Danny's Diary, the podcast powered by Singing News Magazine. Stay tuned. Another episode will be on the way soon.